My name is Kat Paz, and it's time to talk about money on Taking Care of Business. A lot of money has been spent recently thanks to Black Friday, Christmas, Halloween, New Year's, weddings, and the list goes on. Let's not talk about Easter yet. With big spending like this, the savings and the growth element of your finances may have to take like a back seat. My guest today is Glenn James, podcast host of My Millennial Money and the author of the book Sort Your Money Out and Get Invested. We're going to talk about changing your money mindset to ensure your financial goals stay on track despite the festive times. Welcome to Taking Care of Business, Glenn.
Hey, Kat. Thanks so much for having me, and to all your listeners, g'day.
Nice. Love it. I can intuitively feel people wanting to hide under the covers at the moment because talking about money can be a bit daunting for some. But hey, talk about the next episode of the most popular reality show. That seems to be more digestible at the dinner table. Excuse the pun. I love those.
Yeah.
Why do people struggle with that?
Yeah. And it's I think it is changing. Like, social media has really brought the money chat to the surface. And I think, you know, you don't have to talk to people about, you know, I earn this much money, but you can certainly talk about the concepts because we can all understand and learn from each other when it comes to money concepts, to small business concepts. And I just think it's a really good conversation because, you know, we can all be encouraged by each other.
That is so true. And your book is like a personal finance reference tool because it covers quite a few topics, and I want to try and touch on some of those. So you mentioned in your book it's about mindset.
Yeah, so I honestly think the first thing that we need to do with our money is to really get in a healthy mindset about money. And a lot of that stuff is unlearning the stuff that we may have picked up from previous generations, unlearning stuff that we may have picked up from our parents that might not work in today's economy and today's culture.
Yeah, totally. Like, some of those, I guess, is not really knowing how money is spent, not seeing it.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting point in time because cash is actually becoming less and less. So we are disconnecting from that physical touch, right? So if we're not really on top of handling our money and understanding the principles, it could be a wild ride for a lot of people.
How do people learn about money today with cash is disappearing? Because that's how I learned it. I saw it dwindling out of my hand.
Yeah, well, it's funny that I actually run an online course called the Glenn James Spending Plan. And I used to teach that, you know, go to the ATM, withdraw money, you'll spend less if you use cash. But now I've had to move to actually saying, well, actually have a separate bank and a separate bank account. So you quarantine most of your money and you have a smaller amount that you can manage week on week with that separate bank account.
That's a really good idea. When would be a good time to look at your finances, considering it's the end of the festive season? Is it part of the New Year resolutions wish list?
I think, number one, it's more about the ongoing habits and behaviors. So if we have a think about health and fitness, it's like asking, when's a good time to get fit? When's a good time to get healthy? I think it's more about how do we implement habits that are just in our life. So it might be once a fortnight, we pull up the bank statement and have a look. Once a month, we go over the budget. I think it's an ongoing thing. And particularly, you know, I'm not sure when this will go up to your audience, but we need to know about the festive season and Christmas, that it's no surprise. It's the same date every year, and we should be able to plan for that. And the problem is, a lot of us don't plan for it because we don't have good habits and behaviors when it comes to our money.
Awesome. Now, switching quickly to investing in shares, the lower interest rates, you know, it's made savings a bit less attractive. And there's so much buzz in the investments, mainly shares and cryptocurrency. I'm talking about Shiba at the moment going crazy. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that and financial goals?
Well, it does come back to financial goals, right? You know, you mentioned crypto coins and all that. That's relatively new. It's highly speculative. There's no real long-term track record. So if anyone wanted to have a bit of a foray into that world, I wouldn't suggest more than maybe 2% of your net worth. Because, you know, if a coin goes up 50% overnight, that's awesome if you've got all your money in there. But the chances of that happening, it's quite low for most of the time. So we just want to make sure if, you know, your coin value goes down by half, that you don't get completely flushed. So just on that part, I would really limit cryptocurrencies to 2% of your net worth. In terms of goals, anything we do in life, it does come down to goals, intention, coupled with what habits and behaviors are we putting towards those goals and in that direction. And certainly the number one thing people need to do before they start investing is to nail their actual goal. Like, what? Like if you've got $300 a month left over, well, sure, you might want to invest that money, but I would actually first say, well, do you need a new lounge? Do you need to save for a holiday? Do you need to do this and do that? So we absolutely just carve out money that's going to be needed in the short term. And then anything that isn't allocated for the short term, we can then commit to a long-term wealth building strategy.
It's funny, I had a conversation. I mean, this isn't a good financial plan, I don't think. But someone was asking, oh, you know, I need a new bag. And then we're like, get a Birkin, because that's the weird statement people say. And then and someone else was like, you know what? I need to pay off my house, buy my dream car, buy my dream house and pay it off fully, put my kid through school, create a trust fund for them before I even think about getting a Birkin.
Yeah. And that's it. Like, it's it just really does come back to goals. And in the book, Sort Your Money Out and Get Invested, there's kind of two parts that I talk about in terms of setting up our financial life. One part, I look holistically at, I use the analogy of the sound financial house, about having good foundations for the house before we worry what the roof will look like. And then there's another part where we look at our spending and our actual budget and prioritizing things, because a lot of people, and I've been guilty of this, and I'm sure you have, Kat, you sound like you're fun with your money.
A bit.
we sometimes confuse a luxury and think that it's a need. And we have too many luxuries in our lives, and we wonder why we can't get ahead, but they're not needs, they're luxuries. So that's a trap there as well.
I feel like I need a tambourine, like I'm in those Pentecostal churches going, That's some real truth right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now I'm going to switch really quick because I want to cover everything. You are a retired financial planner. I mean, that's a whole topic in itself.
Yeah.
Money goals right there. But when it comes to managing finances, you know, some people, they don't do it as well as they'd like, but also you need a devil's advocate, which I call a financial planner. How pivotal is it to get the right advice?
Well, I think it's a make and break. And, you know, a lot of people are skeptical about getting extra help. But I know one thing in life, most of the high performing athletes in the world and sporting teams have a coach. And that's counterintuitive. If you're the best in the world at tennis, why do you need a coach? So it does go back to accountability. It does go back to that coach to be able to stand in a different position and see your world from a different angle. And that's no different than having a financial advisor in your life. Believe it or not, I pay for a financial advisor in my own life, because as much as I run the My Millennial Money podcast and I'm, you know, the money guy and all that stuff, I'm not above, you know, doing dumb things with my money. So I need that coach. I need that sounding board. I need that person to help really make sure that I keep on track.
Well, it's that sane person who goes, but what if you didn't get a Birkin?
Yeah.
I don't think I'm ever going to own one, but yeah.
Yeah. But the whole thing is, it's like, you know, we can't judge somebody else's financial goals, right? Because what is a priority and what you can afford in your life, it might not be a priority. It might not be something that someone else can afford. And that's the biggest trap. And particularly in Australia, this whole tall poppy syndrome thing, you know, in the book, the second chapter about mindset and money, I really do try and punch this whole idea in the face of that you have to do things because of other people, or you can't do things because of other people.
On that note, actually, this is possibly the last question. Well, not really. Okay. Ethical investment has taken off. In fact, there is a company that like raised $5 million within days of opening the crowdfunding release recently. Yeah. And it's begs the question, is ethical investment as good as investing in minerals and metals?
Well, I actually spent quite a bit of time in the book profiling some ethical investments. Now, you know, at the turn of the century, and we sound old now, but in the year 2000, there was some skeptics out there to say, ethical investing, don't invest because you just don't get a return from investing in ethical investing. Now, a lot of people think ethical investing is, I'm just investing in a wind farm or something like that. But ethical investing, it goes beyond that. It actually looks at a whole screening process of, you know, what's the company's board composition? Who's on the board? How are they treating their staff? What are their supply chains like? Are they trashing the place? And so on. And a lot of people instantly think, if you're in mining, you're not ethical. But the thing is, companies such as Fortescue could be seen as an ethical company because of all the things that I've talked about, and because the iron ore that they use is used in, you know, they're not digging up coal and burning it, and iron ore is still going to be needed in a lot of the products we use today. So it's a misconception that I wanted to address in the book about what is actually ethical investing and how do we screen for it. And I use some real-life examples in the book to really help people understand, because actually, Kat, have you got 2 seconds? I've got the book in front of me. I'll play a little game for you about ethical investing. Would you like that?
I would love that. Let's do it.
All right, let's do that. I've just got to find it. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to read to you 3 situations, and you're going to tell me what is more ethical, okay, as a company to invest in. So the first one, a big international worldwide social media company that track your every move online and sell your data to advertisers so they can just flog ads to you, okay? That's number one. Number two, a big bank who has been in the news for knowingly or unknowingly being used for money laundering and human trafficking through ATMs and whatnot. Or three, the coal company that's digging up coal and selling it overseas. What's more ethical to you?
Oh, my goodness.
And you really don't have to answer that, but it's a proposition that I put to people in the book to say, you know, what's ethical to you might not be ethical to somebody else. And to me, I think, you know, personally, a big international social media company with a blue F logo, you know, that's up the top of the list to not ethical as far as I'm concerned. But it really just depends of your experience growing up and the way that you see the world.
And your values and the things you live by.
Absolutely.
I had a mentor who said, choose your happiness.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's it. Like we've all got choices, and thankfully we've got the internet and we've got access to information. And the book, you know, Sort Your Money Out and Get Invested, it is not like go and invest here. It's more like I'll show you how to invest. I'll show you what to look for so you can be educated enough to make your own decision.
I will also highlight that this book has diverse case studies, which are quite inclusive and features those of varying social, economic backgrounds, race and sexuality. That brings that relatability from it. Can you tell me what, just as a last question, what inspired you to extend that?
Look, the more that I run the My Millennial Money podcasting community, the more people I speak to. And just because I've experienced something one way doesn't mean it's the same as everyone else's experience. So what I thought was I'm going to get the most diverse range of case studies from, you know, all the types of people and in between and all that as I can, just to highlight their story. You know, there's a touching story in the book of an Indigenous Australian young woman who, you know, by just applying some of the principles that I talked about, was the only second person in her family to ever own a home.
Wow.
And to me, that's a story worth telling.
Absolutely. It's more common than many people think.
Totally. So I just wanted to like really, yeah, highlight different stories, different case studies, different experiences. And the common denominator with all of them were, no matter what your situation is, you've got a choice. Do you want to choose to try and go after your goals? Do you want to choose to do the opposite of what people are saying? Do you want to choose to try and make a better life for you and your family?
I'm actually going to leave it there with those questions for our listeners to reflect on. But thank you so much, Glenn James, for the time. Learned so much. It's a topic that I enjoy exploring, and it's been great to have you on.
Not a problem. Thank you so much, Kat. And if there's any of my listeners that are listening to us right now, get back to work.
Awesome.
Thanks, Kat. I'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks for tuning in. I'll talk to you next time.